So my name's Laura Frost, and I'm a textbook author in chemistry, and my day job is director of the Whitaker Center for STEM Education. And what I do in my day job, one of my the goals of the center is to provide professional development for faculty. And so I spend a lot of my day job figuring out better ways to help students learn. So, and that also helps me with writing the textbook, too. So, so today I wanted to share some of the things that I've more recently come to learn about how students learn and how we as authors or academics can help with that. So that's a little bit about me. I'm from Southwest Florida now. I've been there 3 years in Fort Myers, Florida Gulf Coast University. It's about 2 hours south of Tampa. It's very humid there, unlike here. So I'm experiencing the dry heat right now. So that's me. So I wanted to know a little bit about you because I want to make sure that everybody's going to take something away from the session. How many of you are textbook authors? Okay, keep your hands up. How many of you are textbook readers? Okay, okay. And how many of you are, oh, people are still coming in. Good. Don't sit alone, please. How many of you are faculty instructors, if you teach something? And how many of you have ever learned something? Oh, you should have kept your hands up. Okay. Okay. Okay, and then how many of you have ever given a presentation on anything using PowerPoint? Okay, great. I think everybody's primed to get something out of this session. Okay, so so a lot of what I'm going to talk about today comes from this book. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Richard Mayer. Anybody? Okay, so only a couple. So this is really good. Okay. So a year ago, I went to a conference on cognitive science, and it was extremely fascinating. And I just am going to try to prime some of this by telling you that we know more. In the last 10 years, we've learned so much about how the brain works, and now it's starting to filter over into, can't we use that to help students learn better? Because we understand so much about how the brain operates and where those centers are in the brain from imaging, that we can now take it, you know, to the next level and put some of that into practice so that we can help students learn better. Okay, so does everybody have some paper maybe to jot some notes down? What I want to do, and I think I have a marker here. Oh, no, there's markers on this. Board. I'm going to write the questions up here so you can have access to them. I'm going to show you, first I'm going to show you some pictures from textbooks, because some of you said you were textbook authors. And then I'm going to show you some PowerPoint slides. Okay? And I want you to think about, is the slide appropriate? Is the slide appropriate? So what I mean by that is, can you learn something from that slide? And if you say no, how might you improve it? Okay, so jot down a little note. So I'm going to show you 5 textbook pieces or written print material and 5 PowerPoint slides. So is the slide appropriate? If no, how would you improve it? And why did you decide that? Okay, so we're going to get into some of this multimedia. Now, multimedia means learning from both text and pictures, okay? And we'll talk a little bit more about the evidence after we have this fun, okay? So I'm going to write on this board the questions. Is the slide appropriate or the page? If no, how would you improve the message? And why did you decide that you would improve it, okay? So I'm going to give you some time, and I'm going to write this over here in case you forget what the questions are. Okay, can every, well, because everybody won't be able to see. I'll just, if you need help and forget the questions, I'll be happy to repeat them back in the back. Okay, so here's the first one. Oh, I have the questions up here. I forgot I put them in here because I was not sure if there was going to be a board. It's in the right font, though. Okay. Okay. So now you could write some of this down, I guess. And I'll repeat it as we go along. Okay, so is everybody ready? Because maybe I'll give you like 45 seconds a slide. Okay, here's the first one. This is from a textbook. Is the slide appropriate? How would you improve the message if you said no? And why did you decide? Okay? Okay, here's the next one. I redacted a few things in the black. I don't know if you can read it or not. There's some text about the textbook. Libby, can we? He wants to lower the lights. That's all. You didn't have to run up here. I was just going to see if you could get the lights lower. Stephen. The gist of this one is there's some information about the book, and then there's a picture there. This one may not work so well. I don't know. Yeah, it's so the authors did this biochemistry developed in with the student success in mind. Designed primarily for a one-term introductory course in biochemistry, the new text takes a modern and selective approach to the vast. And so it's information about what the textbook's plans are. Okay, is it appropriate? How would you improve the message if you said no, and why did you decide that? Okay, here's another. This is from a textbook. And I can't tell you any of that information about whose textbooks these are. And this is some of the running text here. This is at the top of the page, and this is part of the running text. Okay, here's the next one. This is a sixth grade math textbook. How would you improve the message? Why did you decide to why did you decide that? And here's the last of the print. Just out of curiosity, does anybody know what the guy is doing? He's playing disc golf. Yeah. Okay, so those were five print examples, and now I'm going to show you five slides, which, again, do you think they're appropriate? If not, what would you do to change it? How could you improve it? All right. Okay, here's the first of the five. These are slides. Here's the second one. Okay, here's the third one. Anybody here in the medical field? Okay. You might know what Swan Gantz is. Huh? Here's the fourth one. Now, this is actually, the top part's not there, but it tells you that this is an animation. And when you click on play, you get narrative that goes along with this. Okay, we got one more. Okay, so maybe I need the lights up just a little bit. No. I mean, there's still going to be slides, but you might want to look at some of your information there. Okay, so, you know, why use words and pictures? And this multimedia principle that has been researched in cognitive science says that people learn better when there's words and pictures versus just words or narration alone. Okay, so you don't have to take my word for it. I'm going to show you the experiment. Okay, and this is one of dozens that are in this book. And by the way, Richard Mayer has several books too, so that's not the only one. He's got them for, they're very popular in instructional design, which many of us, because if we're faculty, we don't have a lot of time to go to the Teaching and Learning Center and learn about how to do instructional design. So, you know, we may or may not know about these. Okay, so the experiment is that groups of people are given information about how a bicycle pump works, okay? And the information is delivered in four different ways, okay? And then after it's delivered, they're asked a series of questions about how a bicycle pump works, and they're also asked some questions about what would you do if, so kind of an application question or a transfer question. Okay, so the four different deliveries are, one of them's text only. Okay, so that's one of the delivery methods, it's text only. The italics is added because that's where how the bicycle pump works part is in there. So one of the groups gets that. Another group gets text and these illustrations, okay, which looks like this. Another group just gets an audio of this. This is the audio they get, so they're hearing it, okay? And then a fourth group gets narration with an animation, okay? So they're being, you know, they're hearing it and they're watching. Okay, so after they do one of these, they take a test, okay? And part of the test is retention. So, you know, write down everything you can remember about the bicycle pump and how it works. And then the transfer test would have, you know, higher order thinking questions in it, right? Okay, so these are the types of questions. So you want to see the data? Okay, so this was done many times with many groups. And that's part of what I like about Richard Mayer is he didn't just do any of this one time. Multiple times with different types of tests. One of them's about lightning striking. One of them's about the bicycle pump, how brakes work. So there's a bunch of different scenarios. And here's the data. Okay, if you look at the white ones, that's either narration only or text only. And these are different. Each one of these little two-piece bar graphs is a time that the test was done with a group of people, okay, that all four tests were done. And so the people who got the narration or the text only got about 20% right. And the people who had the narration with the animation or the text with the illustration got at least 40, sometimes 60% of the information recalled, right, when they took the test. Okay, so, you know, how does it work? And for this, we have to remind you how we process information, okay? We can't look at something in a presentation and put it right into our long-term memory. That's not the way we process information. The way we process it is first it has to everything comes in through, you know, we see all kinds of stuff that we don't process, right? The color of the carpet in here. We're not going to take that information in because we don't need that for our survival. It's not important to us. So, but we do process some information. So the first thing we have to do is select what's important to us, okay? And we do that with the sensory memory, which is also called perception filter. You know, what are we going to pay attention to, okay? And so words go in through the ears if it's narrated, and if it's text, it goes in through the eyes, and pictures go in through the eyes. So you have these two senses that could be involved here, okay? And then after that, we need to organize the information, and that's done in the working memory. So sounds work with images. If we only had one, like a narration, we'd only be going through one of those pathways, right? So if you have both, you're working this in multiple, you know, at least two different ways. So you're organizing the information in the working memory and you're manipulating it so that it makes sense. And then in the end, you integrate this information, and then, and only then, is it allowed to transfer and you bring in some of your prior knowledge. Then only then can it possibly go into long-term memory, okay? So this is kind of the why does this work. Why did those results happen from what we know from cognitive science? Okay, so there are a lot of these principles in the multimedia learning, and I got some handouts here so that you can look at these principles as we look back at those slides in a minute. Some of them, oh wait, the back ones I think are something different. Yeah. Okay, and I need one, so. And here's some for the other side. So I'm going to pass these around. Okay. Okay. But what we're trying to do here, if you know, for optimization of learning, okay, is there's three demands that we make on the learners, and they're related to these different areas: the sensory memory, the short-term memory, and the long-term memory. Anything that's extraneous, and you might have noticed some extraneous stuff on some of those slides, that doesn't support what your point is just going to be extra cognitive load. So you want to try to reduce that, right? Reduce extraneous processing. Now, the essential processing is where you're trying to put the things together in your working memory, okay? So you want to try to manage that. Don't overload that piece, okay? And then only if you can manage that essential processing can you even get to this fostering the generative processing, which is the piece where you can actually get the information stored into the long-term memory. Okay, now, so I think everybody has a handout now. You see these three areas: extraneous, essential, and generative, and there's some more principles under those. So now that we have that information, oh, the other thing about this is The stuff in parentheses tells you how many experiments were done, and the ES is the effect size. So when you have multiple experiments and you want to compare them to each other, statistically you project an effect size. Anything bigger than 0.8 means it's a large effect, okay, which means it probably holds water, okay, as an experiment. Okay, so now we're going to look at the slides again. So let's go back to this one. And I'm kind of curious if you thought that slide was appropriate. How many people said it's appropriate? One? Two? Okay. So this is in an intro chemistry book. I'm not going to say who's or where. It's not mine. but when I saw this, where did your eyes go? To the margarita recipe, right? Okay. Okay, so this violates, so what did you think was the, you know, what could be done to make it better? Yes. Oh, wait, you're supposed to wait for the microphone.
I'd say use a call out. So you know, focus attention on the words that you want attention focused on. And
yes, sir.
Change the background color. Change the background colors to make it more readable.
Yeah, yeah. So if you look at those principles, one of those is the signaling principle, right? So it gives you some kind of cue. Go ahead.
Well, the real essential thing on there is the warning label. So I would eliminate everything on there that's extraneous, including the product of Mexico at the bottom, and just have the government warning. That's the part you're trying to emphasize.
I think you guys are catching on to this, right? So this actually appeared just like this in the textbook I found it in. And so, you know, something like this, and I couldn't really trim it enough, because if you trim it, well, who knows, you know, it's just a government warning label. That's the only thing you're really interested in.
It should have been reproduced that way. It should. Oh, sorry. So the government warning label should have been taken from something that could have been reproduced nicely, or simply just typed in with a box around it, so that it was a legible print on a clear background. Here you're. There's so many things wrong with this.
It's, okay.
You don't know where to begin.
Okay, but this clearly violates the signaling principle and many other things, right? There's a lot of extraneous stuff on there. Okay, all right, so good. I think you're catching on to this. Okay, so here's the next one. Any comments on this one? It's hard to read because it's on a black with white. Okay. No caption. Yeah, so what is that molecule? Nowhere does it say what it is. It's extraneous in that sense, right? Because it doesn't foster any generative processing, because it doesn't have any meaning. It doesn't have anything to do with that. Anybody know what the molecule is? Yes, it's ATP. I thought there'd be some geeks out there that would, besides me, that would. So how would you improve this? Start all over. Go ahead.
I think one of the things to do is just to label it. If it's an ATP molecule, label it.
Yeah, you could put a little text with the picture.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Or what we would call an annotation. You might say what's important about it, like, you know, the ATP molecule is responsible for, you know, basic
biologic
processes.
Yeah, because here you have
processes.
A picture that has nothing to do with the text, and you got text right. That has nothing to do with the picture.
But I do like the fact that text is wrapped around. I do like that effect because it brings the picture, the figure, into the text. I do like
but
that.
But the picture has nothing to do with the text.
Well, I can't read the text, but if the text is somehow related, then
it's not. It's about the book in general. It's not about the molecule.
So you have to recognize that this is the back of a book cover. So all your thinking has probably been realigned from thinking that this might be part of a page in a textbook. So the image is superfluous in this case.
Yeah.
There should be no image there. As far as the white text in the back, dark background, that was a stylistic choice of the book cover designer. So in this case, the picture is adventitious, superfluous.
Okay, so here's a solution I came up with. Besides the text added to the picture, how about a picture that has happy people studying chemistry? Because that's what they're that's what this is talking about. It's the text and the, you know, the picture. It would help, right? It goes together. Okay, so here's the next one. Any comments on this one?
The figure's floating.
The figure's kind of floating. I was kind of...
Too much white space.
I'm not so sure about that. This is just a piece of a page, so there's more text running under this on the page.
But you probably have a whole white column on the right side that's blank.
Yeah.
Is the whole right side blank, too?
The margin? It's the margin on the right. Yeah. This is on the right side of a page. I just wanted to point out some of this text here. And I didn't highlight all of it, but the first part says this enzyme comes from a bacteria. It has 9 polypeptides, arranges a trimer of trimers. None of that was in the text at all. Okay, so, you know, somebody's reading this, and that information has no meaning whatsoever to the reader because they don't know what that stuff is. Okay, and then there's supposed to be dark purple spheres. Did anybody see those? Okay, so I would say this is, again, extraneous. This is violating this coherent principle, right? Because this is some extraneous text here that you don't really need. That is urease, and I will point out that there is a call-out down here to go to the picture in the part where they talk about this is the crystal structure of urease. Here it is. That's kind of all they're doing there is showing the structure. Yes, Libby.
Yeah, just what's a call-out? I remember
that term. Oh, it's just when you put the figs, you know, refer to
the
figure.
The question was, what is a call-out?
Okay, so the call-out is just the location in the text that refers to a figure. So this, you know, see figure 15, that's called a call-out. Okay, and then it takes you over to figure 15.
Well, maybe the biggest error, though, is that we see the figure before we see the reference to the figure. So we'd want to read that. We want students to read the paragraph first. I think I can't read the text from here.
Yeah.
But it seems like you'd want them to read the paragraph first, right?
Sure.
And then look at the photo and then read the call out.
Yes, and if you've written a textbook, you know that designers of the pages like to just have things spread out a nice way, whether it goes with where the stuff is or not, right? Okay, on to this one. Now, I will point out that there are some okay things going on here. There's a picture and there's some text by it. Okay, and in, oops, and there's another picture down here with a little bit of text by it. So, picture and text. But what else is any other things you noticed? One over here.
It's so busy with all the animation pictures, you wonder. That's why sixth grade kids don't learn math.
I was amazed when I saw this. This is one of my daughter's textbooks, actually.
What's the size of the page?
The size of this page, the book is probably like as big as this, or, you know, a little bigger than this, so it's kind of a big book, yeah.
What grade is
this? Sixth grade. So, you know, I don't really take issue with the things on the left side. The thing I take issue with is over here. The background is just, it's kind of in the way. It's extraneous, okay? Back to its decoration. How are you going to, you know, generate processing for that? And the graphs actually do go with the questions below it, but it's kind of hard to tell because there's so much stuff going on there, okay?
There's no direction to eye flow.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and also, you know, figure 3, the one on the right with the teddy bear isn't till the last couple problems, and figure 2 is in the middle, and the figure 1 is the first couple problems. Okay. Okay, so those, yes, got a question over here.
You know, in looking at this, I actually kind of like the real-world math, that those examples.
Yeah.
But in looking at this, that gray spaceship and all that is extraneous. You might remove that. Move the real-world math examples up and those three graphs below, because then you're asking questions about those graphs and those real-world math questions that relate to those other ones.
Yeah, or put them to the side and just make these, you know, two columns or something. I mean, you guys are great because you see what the issues are. Okay. And we're going to help change it, right, in the future. Okay. Okay, here's this one. Anybody see any issues? Too much copy, he said. You divided it into four different slides. So this is a spread of a magazine. Okay. Okay. Four different illustrations, yeah. Okay, so yeah, over there. What is the little kid doing? Okay? You can't read the article, but I read the article and there's no mention of that child anywhere. Okay, he's not in the article. The guy doesn't say he has kids and his son is his caddy or anything like that. There's nothing about that child, which is where your focus goes, in the article.
I don't know. Is it? It's all men. All men.
Well, it's actually an interview with the fella who's shown four times there. So it's actually a conversation, you know, editor, right, you know, asking questions and he's answering the question. I think the type is a little too small, right? Because you're going right to the pictures and it doesn't encourage you to read the article. Okay, so again, the background is also distracting. If the point is to read the interview, which this is a magazine, so you'd think it would be, maybe they should make the text a little bigger. Okay? Okay, so we're going on to the slides now. Okay, here was the first one. This one wasn't bad, was it? Could it be better? Okay, look at the fourth principle down under extraneous processing, spatial contiguity principle. People learn more deeply when corresponding words and pictures are presented near rather than far, which is what you had mentioned in the back there about, you know, putting things in the right place in the textbook. There is a way to make this a little bit better. It's not bad. Go ahead.
Might want to move the definitions over to where the words are so that they're right.
Okay. Good. Yes.
The sun placement adds confusion because you've got the evaporation going into the sun. And so, I mean, if they want to suggest that that's the heat source for the diagram, that could be up a ways from there. But moving the labels over the descriptions to the labels, that's a good integrative thing to do in TechStart.
One question that comes to mind as we look at something like this. What's the role of figure legends now? If we're moving a lot of what used to be in a figure legend up to the figure, is a figure legend just going to be the water cycle, figure 14? Or is a figure legend going to be more descriptive?
I don't know the answer to that. I mean, some of my figures have things just like this place right next to. And then if there's nothing really to point out in the figure but a little bit of information about it, then I put it at the bottom of the figure as a legend. Okay.
Figure legends are becoming less and less prominent. And the material from used to be in figure legend is now moved up into the figure, according to the principle.
So that's a better way to do it. Now, so when you say figure legend, are you talking about like something at the bottom of the page?
Well, some we just saw in Urias. Remember that figure we saw a couple of minutes ago? You saw the Urias, blah, 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 all that information. In textbooks, I'm more and more seeing very skimpy figure legends and a lot more labeling on the figure.
Mm-hmm. I think that's part of this principle. Yes. Robert doesn't like this figure.
The diagram doesn't show the water cycle. It leaves out the land component, runoff, transpiration from plants. It has it all over the ocean concept. So they need to modify to show the water cycle if that's indeed what it's supposed to show.
Yeah, and I don't know what level this figure is posed to. It could be third grade.
Well, then there has to be land in it. Yeah.
But I don't know what the level is for this.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment about his comment.
Yeah.
They're not really called legends. It's the figure caption that really what you're talking about.
Okay.
And we're putting a lot of the information these days from the figure caption into the figure itself, and those are called annotations. So the text under the words condensation, evaporation, precipitation, those would all be called annotations that used to be in the figure caption. So typically a figure caption now would just be something like the water cycle, period, and that's it. And then the pertinent information is closer into what's being shown on the figure itself.
One more here.
We also have to keep in mind that this is a slide and not from a textbook.
Yeah.
So that, again, on slides, you want to minimize additional text, the part that might be a caption in a textbook. So you just want everything to be as clear in the annotation of the figure itself, rather than having and have as little other text on the slide as possible.
Yeah. So thank you for bringing that up. This is a slide. It's not a text figure per se. Okay, so here's the next one. Problems you saw with this. Now, you know, these are slides, so say somebody's lecturing about this or talking about this with their students.
You need an hour to digest this. So
yeah.
if you put this up and then, okay, next slide, you know, nothing.
Right, yeah. How long are you going to keep this up and talk about it?
So thank you for your talk, Laura, and we'll just look at this.
Try to digest all that. Okay, we have one more over
here. It needs a title. It needs to be larger so that you can see the writing on it from more than the front row. I think it's is it photosynthesis?
Yeah.
Yeah. And
how many people would know that's photosynthesis cycle if they didn't label it?
Your students wouldn't, you know, unless they heard you say it and they remembered that you said it and wrote it down, right? Okay, so if you look at the handout there, there's a principle under the essential processing that says it's a segmenting principle, user pace segments. This is not a user pace segment, right? This is everything that the person wants to talk about in one slide. Yes.
In STEM, I always have the problem, you need all the details, which can be, you know, pretty minute, but you need them to solve problems. Mm-hmm. So how do you present the details and follow, like, the coherent principle or avoid doing this because he's got all the details in there?
Well, so the textbook provides the details often, right? You don't necessarily, if you're teaching, have to give all the details if you give them a problem that incorporates the details.
But how do you do it in a textbook and still be coherent so that they see the major principles and they're not buried in the details?
Provide examples, concrete examples.
You make it a two-stage diagram with a simplistic photosynthesis respiration diagram. And then the more advanced that connects to that, but you have your orders of heading straightened out in this figure. Everything's the same point size. So you do a two-stage, the simple.
Yeah. So another thing that you can do in a textbook as well, which goes along with what you're saying, is break it up into steps, right? There is a lot of detail. So you can break up into steps. That's also the segmenting or signaling principle. Okay, the signaling is, you know, learning better when you have cues that highlight what's essential. Okay, so maybe for this one, you show one slide that's this to start. And then you go back to the original and you put another, or, you know, you start highlighting various pieces of that original when you're talking about them or having them explore them in your classroom.
Yeah, that's what I was going to suggest, is to use some color. It's all black and white for one thing.
Yeah.
And then for the different parts, and it might not be just like what Robert was saying, like two different ones, maybe three or four, and highlight a step, maybe even enlarge it. And then with a good annotation on there, you can state very concisely what is important about that step and what its importance is in the whole process that's shown in that bigger diagram.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Okay, so let's go to this one. Comments?
Well, that was too big. Is that about a surfing?
Not really.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what the windsurfer is doing. And there is a difference between windsurfing and regular surfing. And I'm not quite sure. Also, the horizontal axis doesn't look to be labeled with anything.
Yeah.
So it looks to be time, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, it is time. So this is an example of extraneous processing coherence principle, right? Because the surfer really doesn't have anything to do with this. Does anybody know what the Schwanz-Ganz PAC insertion is? Just sometimes there's a medical person in the audience. It's a catheter, right? It's a pulmonary artery catheter. And it's not really like surfing. Okay. So what it does, to my knowledge, and I won't... Do you want?
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
It's okay.
I just say, this strikes me as a problem a textbook author has, is that often they want to use... the person who's the layout artist, if you rely on them, they'll use often stock photos, which is an example there, just paste one in, because they're less expensive, right? And they may not really understand your concept of what you're trying to do. I mean, often I'm lucky I have a publisher who lets me give them feedback on the layout or make suggestions to a limit. But it's so important, I think, for an author, both of us are more verbally oriented, to really have the knowledge that you're offering here. I mean, the kind of design sense, design training. So I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. So anyway, this PAC, pulmonary artery catheter, I'm going to tell you what I know about it, and you'll just have to live with that unless you want to look up more information about it. But so what it does is, as you're putting the catheter in towards the heart, it'll change the pressure. It has like a pressure sensor on it, and by the pressure sensor, you can figure out where you are in the artery, right? And so there was a balloon inflation here, and the pressure went way down in this catheter, so they found the balloon that they were looking for whatever.
This is not my area, so I haven't looked at one of these for 45 years. But, yes, the idea is to record the pressures after inserting this catheter. It records pressures, and when you inflate the balloon, after it's in the pulmonary artery, you inflate the balloon, and then the pressure of the blood flow causes it to wedge into a smaller pulmonary artery branch, which is then called the wedge pressure, which is what you actually want to get.
That's where you're trying to go. So the catheter is acting like kind of a search device.
Right. And so the preceding picture should have shown a catheter at its various possible locations, at the various locations corresponding to the right atrium, right ventricle,
yeah, so maybe a picture of a heart and the different
wedge.
Locations.
It should show the catheter with its balloon.
But certainly not a surfer.
But not a surfer.
Okay. Okay. Okay, then we have this one. Anybody want to make a comment on this one?
The figure's floating again.
Well, now let's. This is on a website, so it, you could make it as big as your screen. Okay, so if you look at the principles there, the, one of them is called the modality principle. It's in the essential processing area. Pictures and spoken words, and pictures or printed words, but not pictures, spoken words, and printed words, which is what is given here. Okay, because the ears and the eyes can't be reading and hearing together. It's hard to essentially process that, one or the other, but not both. Okay, this came off of a website, and I went back to the website to see if I could find this, and what they've done is they've actually taken out the text now. So there's just narration in the pictures, and you can scroll through. It's much better. And I would show you the website, but we're running short.
Just a quick question on that. I'm just thinking about in terms of accessibility for people who can't hear.
Yes,
I'm assuming
for those folks.
Right.
Right.
So I'm assuming they would have something built into that,
yes,
that you could turn on rather than just having
that you would, yeah, that you can take the narration off and just have the text. Either one of those is much better for your processing than both narration and text. Okay, what about this one? What is the point? Okay, this is just a decoration. Doesn't really have much information on there. If you were, you know, talking about the respiratory system.
If this is a slide, presumably there's a presenter who's talking about it, right?
Yes.
So maybe the presenter doesn't want the text up. Maybe the presenter wants the illustration, and then he'll talk the audience through the illustration.
But what's on there?
Well, you might say this is a whole respiratory system and talk about the larynx and esophagus and the lungs and the diaphragm.
And you're going to introduce all those terms without any...
Maybe you clip
you're just going to point to them? Got one behind you there.
Well, this is part of a presentation. Sometimes you just want to know, okay, here's the topic. And then you're going to talk for a while about the topic. You don't have a bunch of slides to go with it. So if that's the case, we know right now
yes,
you're
so,
talking
so
about.
So now you're getting more into what is the context of these slides, which I can't tell you. I'm just trying to use these as examples of if you were going to lecture about the respiratory system, wouldn't something like this be a better slide to start you through?
No, it wouldn't because this is too distracting. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to listen to you, what you're saying about it, and I'm looking at the,
well,
that
okay,
thing.
But you could put in little highlights on certain segment it. You know, draw the people in the audience to certain pieces, or you could have them do an activity and ask them to use the information on the slide.
I agree with the.
What's your name?
Yeah, you were just talking.
Michael.
Michael. Thank you. So I agree with Michael. I think this was clearly, the previous slide was clearly a transition slide. This person had several topics in his lecture. It was not the title slide. There might have been three parts
of
the
you're
lecture.
Too forgiving for this person who we don't know,
oh,
who used it merely
many,
as a decoration.
Okay. I've seen many slides like that. So it's clearly a transition slide introducing the next topic, the respiratory system, and he would say, and now we'll go on to the next topic, which is the respiratory system, and that slide would just be up there to introduce the next topic, and you wouldn't want any clutter like that until the next slide. That could be the next slide. And then you said, and these are the parts we're now going to go over.
Okay. Yes.
Laura. Although I like visual and audio together.
Mm-hmm.
If this someone's talking about this and you have all those words as well, isn't that just going against what you said in the last slide, that the word should be out if there's a narration going on? So if it's a slide and it's a presentation, now we're back to the last one, which I didn't mind
anyway.
Yeah, but
it's not the exact, I mean, you're those are there just to point out the different areas.
But
there's
the person's
not no description
talk.
On
but
there.
The person's not talking about them?
Well, they're giving a little more. The person would be giving more detail on those things. And if this were my slide, I would be putting a box around each of these as I went through them, or you know, so
okay.
that they would focus on that.
Taking these slides out of context.
Yes. I had another slide, and I'm just going to quickly run through it. This was one I had that I was using, and I was like, oh, my gosh, after I learned about the multimedia principle, I'm like, whoa, way too much stuff on there. And so I separated it, and that's one of the slides now, and this is the other slide. There's a dial with numbers on it now. And then I also put this little piece in here about floating because I thought that might be a good application for it. But this is where I want to get to. Okay, the points here are that multimedia learning, it's theory-based, it's research-based. So I just, you know, the whole reason I wanted to talk about it was to ask people who have the ability to do better learning through your textbooks, through your teaching, to be mindful that people learn better when you design the messages that are consistent with the way that we process information. And with that, I'll say thank you.